Hey, welcome everybody. We'll give we'll wait another 30 seconds or so before we kick off. Thanks. So switch it on.
It's on.
Is it on? There you go. There you go, guys. That's for you guys. Okay, thanks everybody, thanks for coming. This session's a Link customer panel discussion session, so it's a Q&A type of session. We have with us today four customers that we're very happy to have on stage to actually have this discussion with you guys. So it's a very interactive session. We also have some pre-planned questions as well. So before I do that, my name's Selvan. I'm a Link TSP at Microsoft based in Melbourne. And I have with me Mario Tavanian up here. And Mario is a UC TSP based in Sydney. We have with us James Frost, who's the chief architect of Super Partners. We have Andrew Pritchard, who's the CIO of Griffith Hack. David Carroll, ICT infrastructure manager, Adelaide City Council. And we've got Fernando Martinez, ICT infrastructure manager, Office of Environment and Heritage, New South Wales. So before I get them to introduce themselves, these customers have actually deployed Link end-to-end within their organizations. So that includes not just for IM and conferencing, but also telephony replacing PABXs, in some instances actually coexisting with their existing PABXs as well, which they'll describe as we go on. So if I could get you to introduce yourself, Fernando.
Good day, everyone. Fernando Martinez, our ICT Infrastructure Manager for the New South Wales Office of Environment and Heritage. So I essentially look after everything behind the wall, as we like to say. Office of Environment is responsible for environment and conservation policy throughout New South Wales. We have about 200 sites, very regional-based organisation, and about 4,000 staff. Anyone that's familiar with New South Wales, National Parks and Wildlife Administration and Management, Environment Protection Authority, so environment legislation and policy, Botanic Gardens. So a very conservation-based organisation.
And Fernando, could you also describe where's Link at and what's the big benefit out of Link that you've got?
Yeah, definitely. So we're currently through a deployment of Link, mainly around Enterprise Voice. We've targeted our four key major sites, which constitute about 50% of those 4,000 seats. So a very metro-based focus at this stage. We're through a deployment. I think we're about 1,150, 1,200 seats at this stage out of the 4,000. Going well from a technology space. We've got some issues around the business, around culture change. It's one of the key takeaways from today. It's all about culture and change management. That's where our real focus and your real focus, I guess, should be on. Going well. Technology is working well. Core quality is excellent and really driving a lot of service and business enhancements around collaboration and conferencing.
Thank you. David.
Thank you. David Carroll, Adelaide City Council. I manage the ICT infrastructure, operations and support area of council. Adelaide City Council, it's Adelaide CBD or central area council. Similar to, I guess, Melbourne and Sydney, we have a concentration of businesses primarily in the city, as those capital cities do. So we have a very similar focus as those types of organisations. ICT-wise, we operate 31 sites across council. 19 of those are fibre connected. The remaining are much smaller sites, which are ADSL2. We came to Link. We were faced with a PABX replacement situation, and we ended up moving to Link as a result of our work in that area. And I guess the key sorts of things we see with Link, there are many benefits. And a lot of good stories have come out of it for our organisation. But I guess you could say crowdsourced support is probably one of the more different and unique ones. An example of the sorts of practices we see with our users now is we have a business area, knowledge experts. They no longer require specialised ICT tools like they used to in the old days. They can use a Link client and help each other out, share a screen. So, a different benefit and a different outcome, but definitely a good one.
Thanks, David. And Andrew?
Hello, I'm Andrew Pritchett, CIO at Griffith Hack. We're a patent attorney law firm. We have four sites. We started deploying Link about 18 months ago, and we finished about 9 months ago, or a bit over. And the main reason why we actually started looking at Link in the first place is we were trying to look at simplifying our whole infrastructure and trying to have one platform that we could manage internally ourselves.
Thank you. Thanks.
Hello, I'm James Frost. I work for Super Partners. Super Partners is a superannuation administrator that services the Australian industry super funds. So the Australian supers of the world, Hostplus, Cbus, HESTA. If you have a superannuation account with any of those customers, then we provide the systems and the IT that supports those organisations. We have about 2,500 users. And we have another 1,000 users amongst those industry super funds. We've adopted Link as our voice platform, and now we're actively trying to sell it to those customers. We're in the early stages of that. We're across about 8 sites, with the majority of them, about 1,800, in a single building in Melbourne. And we started about 6 months ago as part of a PABX replacement. We had an end-of-life Nortel. And we also have a large call centre with about 500 agents that was also end of life. So that project encompassed both the corporate telephony and the call centre.
Excellent. So before we move on to the real Q&A stuff, I just want to set some expectations about what this session is about and what is mainly not as well. So as we went through the deployment cycles for these customers, we learned a lot of things, and those are the kind of things that we want to share with you today, especially around change management. How do you plan for Link? How do you deploy Link? There are some architectural pieces as well, but this is not a technical session. So if you do have questions around deep technical sessions, we can either take it offline, or if it suits the a previous question or whatever, feel free to ask, and we'll see how best we can answer them. This is focused on Link and what they've done. We're also going to touch a bit about their business cases as well, what actually resonated for them, the why of Link, as much as to how they deployed it as well. Okay. With Q&A, we do have some pre-prepared questions which we thought is important for this audience to know via the customers that we have today. But absolutely, feel free to ask questions as you need to. For every question asked, you actually get a pass with the orange T-shirts to actually go ride the flight simulator and actually win that chair at the end of the 3-day event. So every question gets an orange shirt as long as it lasts, that is. Towards the end, we do have the random draws. We have 4 prizes, one of which is the Star Wars kit. So absolutely, let's rock. Okay, so actually, I'll start with you, Andrew.
Sure.
So, Andrew, being a law firm, tell us about your Link implementation. When did it start? How did it start? Did you have a pilot?
I've actually been at the law firm for 3 years, or 3 years in December, and I've got about 10 years' experience in legal IT, we call it. And my last two companies were another vendor shop, both VoIP. And when I started there, we had 4 PABXs. We had, I want to say, about 35 different models of handsets. We only have about 275 people. And we were spending about $1,000 a week, give or take, in patching, because we didn't have the skills internally to do the repatching of phones. And it was just madness. So we started the process straight away. I thought, well, this is just an easy win. There's other problems, like, people, our lawyers, moved offices a lot and moved states, and we had work allocation. And basically, when they moved offices and states, as laughable as it might sound, is they didn't even know how to pick up their voicemail, or they didn't know how to forward a call.
Sure.
And it sounds really silly to say that, but that's actually core functionality of a system, because they didn't know their phones. So we thought this was a quick win. So we actually started looking at. We were very much not looking at Link.
So did you start off with a pilot, and did you move on away from
that? Well, we actually didn't start with a pilot. We actually were probably not even really interested in Link. And what actually happened is the other vendor and Link were on the table, and we had our partner, a traditional partner, and we had a partner called Generation E that came to us, and the Generation E guy was pretty offensive, and he told me I was a complete idiot for not wanting to look at Link. And he said the least you can do by looking at Link was... So it's pretty interesting that the vendor comes and calls me a complete idiot in my second week at my new job. But he didn't use those words, though. It's much harsher words, what he said. Microsoft said I wasn't allowed to use those words. And then he said that basically this, what the least you can do is look at Link and use that to leverage a better price from the other vendor. And so we did that, and we looked at it. And then what happened, and this is about the pilot... We actually acquired another business in our Brisbane office, and that put us into a situation where IT had no idea, but we had roughly 3 weeks to deploy double app handsets in our Brisbane office. And it was only 30, it went from like 20 to 40 or something, you know, but there was a lot of cost in doing that on our NEC PBX, and that's what we replaced. And it was actually cheaper for us to start looking at a pilot. And when we went down the path of trying to work out what we had to deploy different solutions and what, and basically our Link pilot was the only thing that we could do in the time frame, and that's how we got started. And the pilot went so well.
And does it? On from there. Excellent. Okay, James. In your case, you've got a large number of users, 2,000 users, and you also mentioned you've got the call center that you've now moved on, and the 2,000 users are on Link. Did you start around the same approach as well? Did you have a pilot running? How did that go? How do they use it today?
We were lucky enough. We were going through an RFP, and all the usual suspects are there. I won't name them. But we had an urgent requirement to service a new building in Melbourne. So we had 300 people moving into a new building, and of course, you know, we had 2 months to do it, fit out the whole building, put a new phone system in. There wasn't a phone system there. Yeah. We didn't want to pay to extend the Nortel down there. It was end of life. So we actually... the business made the decision to deploy Link ahead of the RFP as effectively, I guess, an early pilot, a trial, a live trial of 300 users. And the end result of that was it was obviously successful, you know.
So today Link is rolled out across your main site as well as the different branches that you said?
That's right. So after the pilot, we deployed all the infrastructure up front to service the pilot site, but obviously with a view that we, you know, expanded across the whole business when the RFP was finished. So that infrastructure was able to service the pilot site and our 8 regional sites across the WAN. You know, we had to go through the normal exercise of buying more bandwidth from Telstra and sizing it all, and deploying gateways out at all those regional sites. It's the normal stuff that you do, but effectively we now have a solution with the services of the country.
So that's an important point he makes, but I just want to drill down on network as well, because this is a common question that we get around when we talk about Link and generally UC as such. And I know a lot of them have experiences over here around especially network planning and bandwidth planning with Link or with any UC platform. So I'm just going to ping you again to see, what did you do there? So you obviously upped the bandwidth, but was there considerations around... was there planning and methodology there? Was it just
there was. I mean, we had no VoIP at all, and as a result, we didn't have any QoS, any QoS on
this
our network.
This is before Link.
This is beforehand.
Yeah, okay.
So we couldn't really guarantee that voice traffic and video and everything else was going to be prioritised correctly. So, okay. Part of that was doing the sizing, getting QoS enabled across the WAN, sure. And going through that exercise.
So now you've got QoS deployed,
yep.
With a bigger pipe as well, or bandwidth, yeah. To cater for.
Yeah, so I mean, we have gateways at our regional sites. So obviously, you know, an inbound call for Perth will come into Perth, and that will stay generally in Perth. No bandwidth required, but we do have. A large call centre.
Yes.
We've got 500 agents. You know, that means there's at least 500 calls in the queue, more than that, probably 600 calls in a queue at all time, and they come into Melbourne,
yep.
And have to get farmed out. So, we have to put a lot of bandwidth in case to service that.
So, again, what we found is that if you've got sites where you've got restricted bandwidth and you need to make sure that you've got the quality that you want or expect, you still need QoS across those sites. So keep that in mind and plan for it. On the flip to his answer, I'm just going to go to David, who's got an interesting case around network and bandwidth as well, because he mentioned he's got a 19 different sites, which are all fiber connected?
Yes.
So that's just plenty of bandwidth. If you need bandwidth, buy from him. So go ahead.
I guess, in our architecture and topology, bandwidth is probably the least of my concerns. 19 private fiber connected sites with a minimum 10 gig connection into the core. It's really not a situation or a scenario that we need to be worried too much about.
So having said that, you do have QoS turned on, though.
Yes, we do. We've got okay. QoS on. And that actually was predominantly on for an earlier VoIP trial we were doing with another product. However, we've left that on across the network, but we don't bother with CSC. So really, I guess at the end of the day, with that amount of bandwidth, it's really not necessary and not required.
So definitely have traffic engineering on the back of your mind. Plan for QoS, plan for the bandwidth that's needed. There is a session tomorrow at the end of, it's actually the last session on Friday. I think there'll be massive giveaways to just get you guys into that session. However, I'll leave that to Vakhtang, who's presenting it. But that'll go more into QoS and the kind of planning you need to do for Link, and especially given that you see workloads is going to have more voice or more, regardless of you know, what is it that you want to deploy. If you deploy it for telephony, you still end up using all the workloads of UC or voice and video and sharing and so on.
Just to expand on that, I think, Selvin, with voice, it's something that your users will notice if you get it wrong. If you've got bandwidth issues and Outlook's a little bit slow or something like that, it's not so much of a business issue. But when you're dealing with voice, those sorts of things can become critical for your business. And it really can see to lead to success or failure with the product you're trying to deploy. If your corporate network, your data network, really can't handle VoIP in general, I wouldn't be going down that path. You might as well stay with a more traditional system, essentially.
Okay. So, Fernando, I'm just going to change tack over here from going away from network to something else that Link does, which is conferencing. Now, you've got an... in the Office of Environment, you've got a mandate around, you know, how much greenness, for lack of a better word, that you need to be doing and using. So can you tell us what your story there is?
Absolutely. Obviously, the environment, we should be taking a lead role. Sometimes we don't, but we should be taking a lead role about environment, sustainable work practices, reducing travel, reducing our CO2 footprint. And we do a lot of that in our data center. We virtualize a lot of our software, have some pretty cool data center technologies to reduce energy consumption, part of a big neighbors project, which we're driving for building efficiencies. So it was really a no-brainer for us to look at our travel. And as I mentioned at the beginning, a large number of regional sites, and if anyone flies regionally, it's probably 10 times more expensive to travel to regions than it is between capital cities, and the carbon footprint angle for us was quite a big driver, on top of the PBX replacement, enhanced services. So our business was really pushing for a video conferencing solution. This is pre-Link days, so we didn't really treat it as a technology solution. It was really around a unified communication strategy and trickle-feeding some of those features around instant messaging and presence, collaboration, and now finally we're on the voice aspect. They are screaming for further deployments in order to reduce their travel funding and reduce CO2.
So was that saving and cost factor in your business case in terms of how you drove?
Not that formally. The way we're structured with our budgets, IT tends to put everything in from a service, but the business actually gains the funding or the benefits of any savings. So it was really hard to measure, I guess. It was actually quite easy to measure travel savings, but productivity, how do you measure
soft
that?
Soft benefits.
Yeah, that's right. Although you have that in there as items in any kind of business case. Our approach was really more around a strategy of UC as opposed to a technical Link infrastructure. Users don't know what Link is. They don't really care. Microsoft might change the name next time, so it might be a Link project today. It could be something else in a few years' time. So I think our angle was a business transformation, getting good executive sponsorship, really highlighting that travel focus, reduction in CO2 savings, and obviously the collaboration experiences. As being a regional, very regional site, a lot of people need to talk to each other and not hopping on a plane and hotels and cabs, etc., was really beneficial for them.
So you mentioned that campaign internally, right, which you've got the slide up there, which is something that Fernando did within his organization. Can you talk to that?
Yeah, definitely. So we called us OEH eConnect, and eConnect was, our, I guess, a little bit of our marketing approach to sell it within the organisation. So as I mentioned, we've been trickle-feeding, I guess, some of these features around presence and instant messaging, voicemail. So very much around a service offering that IT could provide to the organisation, not a new handset or a new telephony VoIP system. So that obviously won us that key first impression. You've got to get your users on board straight away. And as mentioned, voice is one of those things that just has to work. And we're finding that the users as well were struggling a lot with all the new features and all the new techno sort of aspects of a new VoIP solution. So very important to not give them too much too quickly, because you will potentially start losing them, especially us in the government context where literacy of IT or technology ranges very, very vastly or broadly. You know, some people will champion it, will jump on and say, great, love it. Others will be very resistant, change averse. And it comes back to, as I mentioned right at the beginning, around your culture and your change management and really Absolutely. Pushing through that.
So with Link, you get a whole UC platform and you need to plan for this. And it's just like planning for any other new system. However, with Link brings with it not just the PABX that, you know, Fernando mentioned they were actually looking for in the market in the first place, but it's also a video conferencing system, but it's also an IM system, and it has its own unique ways of using the system as well. So you need to plan for change. And in the case of, I guess, in your organization, this was his method of internally marketing, saying that, hey, something new is coming, and, you know, be prepared for it and actually coach for that. We'll dive more into that a bit more. But as we go along, I just want to capture some more thoughts around that change management aspect and how training was adopted. And I'm just going to flick across to Andrew here in terms of change management and how he approached it in a law firm.
Yeah. Well, if anyone knows our industry, we actually have partners and they're all the business owners, and trying to get them to change things is not that easy. But we actually had a good story, I guess. We have a board and they're made up of partners of our firm. And we tried to very much hands-on help people. And this particular board member, he's mid-60s. He didn't have a computer on his desk until about 2 years ago, or about a year ago. His PA, he would like dictate all his emails, and his PA would type them and send them on his behalf. And he charges about $800 an hour for his services. And he came to me and he was a bit stressed out. He was going to the US, and we just put Link in, and we also have a Polycom infrastructure. So we have the RT video, or if you want to, on our Polycom endpoints. And he came and said, Andrew, we've got this real problem. We've got to go to New York for a client and having a board meeting, and I'm really stressed because I don't know what they're talking about at the board meeting. They haven't really got an agenda, and I'm just worried that it might be impacting on me or whatever. And so he said, what can you do? And, like, you know, I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, you know, this guy doesn't even do his own emails. And, like, what am I going to do, you know? So we actually set up a laptop. We went and bought him a Sony laptop, a nice one, and we actually put Link on it, and we gave him a two-click button into our meeting rooms are actually registered to Link. So you can actually see them from the console. And we showed him how to do two clicks to open thing, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning in New York or whatever, and they start the VC, the board members all are in our Perth office and they're all sitting around the table, and then here this guy pops up on the screen in 720p from New York at the minute the board meeting's supposed to start, and comes up on their big Samsung screens, and that actually shocked the board, and they actually had nothing to talk about relating to it. So it was all just in his imagination. But he stayed there for the whole 8 hours through the night, and in his New Yorker, he had no problems. And then he came back, he got a PC on his desk. So that's how we actually, and then he was a big evangelist, I guess. And then that also meant the board actually just realised that they could actually start doing this, you know, unified comms philosophy, and they really started embracing it. So that actually paved the way for us to get a lot of stuff across the line.
So as much as it's easy to use, there's also a lot of material that Microsoft have put out on online, which is called the Link Adoption Kit. And this is actually, you can go to these sites and actually download a whole adoption kit that you can use for internal training and also, you know, just awareness It has marketing awareness material just to put out and say, hey, stuff's changing, you know, we're going to get a new UC system or whatnot. But you'll also have things that you can put out, pre-prepared material that you can put out on each person's desk to say that this is how you make a call, this is how you make a VC call, this is how you call another person and conference them in, this is how we work from home. Everything's there for you. You can go and change that material as you feel like. There's also videos as well, help tools. So we think that change management is extremely critical as much as you, you know, at the speed at which you deploy these UC systems. So plan for that as well. And I want to switch to Adelaide City Council because, again, I mean, government organizations, they have a different way of adopting to things. And I think David had a phased approach, which may be relevant to some of you as well. So David.
Yes, government, we're special. We had a perhaps slightly different approach to the way we went about our deployment. We're 700 users approximately, and we were coming from a PABX replacement. So the PABX is about, before my time, maybe 30 years old, 25 years old, something like that. Definitely a dinosaur. So we had, I guess, a traditional PABX mentality in the organisation, a desk and a number and a phone all go together and they sit there and that's it. People move around, people come and go. The phone never changes, the number never changes, the desk's always there. With Link, for those that have seen it and dived into it, it can be a lot to swallow in a training session all at once. There's multiple ways of doing things and there's a hell of a lot to learn. So we were really all about minimising the impact of change for the users. And we ended up, as we were doing telephony as well, we ended up taking a two-phased approach and a bottom-up approach to the deployment for the organisation. So phase one was basically a straight phone switch. So the users migrated from the PABX system. They were provided a new phone, a new handset on their desk. And they became Link phone users. Phone numbers didn't change. They still had a phone. And away they went. They'll provided an optional 30-minute basic training course on the Link client and the telephone usage. The telephone's a Polycom CX600. That's the corporate SOE. So that got us over the line initially and enabled us to really get it out there rapidly and quickly and start to get people familiar with using the basic features of Link before we follow up with the more advanced features. So we went from the bottom up in the organisation, so presence is the first thing people will notice when they get Link. And I know some organisations do go from the top down, but in our organisation, I guess the executive, the first thing they want their presence information for is going to be to see their managers. A manager will probably want to see their staff. Deploying from the top down, they're not really going to get much benefit of presence, at least, until your deployment catches up and gets all the people below. So we actually went the other way and deployed to general staff first, department by department, and moved up the food chain. So that way when the team leaders get it, the managers get it, the executive get it, they've got instant use of presence information at least, which is probably the most commonly used feature from day one. So we did that different approach. And phase two, that's all about the more advanced features. That's when things like the mobile client come in. If you've integrated it with Exchange for voicemail, Exchange voice interaction, for example, working from home, working in the field, moving around the organisation and so forth. So we did take a slightly different approach, but in our case, a very successful one.
And you've got a phased training approach as well because of that? Train users on phone first and then the rest of the things?
Yeah, it was predominantly focused. The phase one was very much around the phone and how to use the phone, because that's the environment they came from. There was no PC application for telephony prior, so we gave them that, but we put our focus predominantly on how to use the handset, make, receive calls.
That's an... So phased approaches can work in two ways. One is like what David said, you can start with the phone if that's what you're doing first, and then you know you train your users up on Link of VC and the rest of the collaboration suite. Or you can go the other way. I've seen organizations that have said, let's start Link for IM and conferencing and collaboration first, and then we'll look at the phone system. So depending on how your approach is, start with a phased approach, and it definitely helps. If you go in with one training session and then you have the whole thing in one training session. People don't get away what they need to from one session, so have a think of that as well. But David did mention phones and the phone that he uses. There's also other certified phones that Mario has put up on screen for us. And David, how many phones have you got in the city council today with the phone with the Polycom CX600s today?
At the moment, we're sitting equal with users, roughly. Okay. An area that in our PABX decommissioning we still need to complete, I guess, in the approach will be common area phones. So phones that are in public spaces, front counter type phones, areas that don't necessarily have a staff member tied to them for 8-10 hours a day. So they will also be Polycom 600 phones, but they'll be configured as common area phones.
Okay. We did talk about this earlier. Being the council, you've got to supply comms gear for pools, libraries, whatnot. I think in the pool you've got a special case.
Yes.
How does it tie that back to
yes,
Link?
We do. At our aquatic centre, the Adelaide Aquatic Centre, we have a gym there, and we also have lifeguards. The lifeguards walk around and watch people in the pool, and their job basically is to help you if you're drowning. Now, they currently have just standard analog decked handsets, like many of us probably have at home, and they walk around with those clipped on their belt, and really it's just there to receive a call. Ring 000 if they have to. Hopefully they don't jump in the pool with it. In that environment, which is, I guess, highly chlorinated, it is corrosive for IT equipment. Hardware does not last as long at the aquatic centre as it would in a general office environment. It gets eaten away. We really wanted to not impact the business. These people, their job's to save people's lives if they're drowning. In the gym, the person that works there wears a phone as well. They're there purely to spot weights and things like that and help people out if they get into trouble while they're working out. So we really wanted to keep the decked handset because it was the, I guess, the most functional phone for the job. And also, without over-engineering a cordless link solution, what they've got's worked for a long time. It works, they're happy with it. Why reinvent the wheel? So
how's it connected back to Link?
Okay, it connects back to Link using an analog gateway, okay. which in our case is a NETUX series gateways. So basically that enables us on our network to continue to support traditional analog phones. Okay. So in the case of the aquatic centre and in the gym, and we do have a couple of other sites that that's relevant for, they'll continue to use their phones the way they've always used them. Okay, they can't change presence on their handset, but really they don't need to. They can go back to a PC and do that there.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of phones, you've also got phones, Fernando. How many phones have you rolled out today with Link?
We've actually, our first phase of our Link deployment is for 2,000 endpoints, and again, it's the same phone. It's a CX600.
Okay.
We've ummed and ahed about initially, well, should there be a proportion of handsets as opposed to headsets or soft phones, whatever you want to call it, depending on our user profile. Ultimately, we decided to give everyone a handset with various levels of success. We expect some kind of transition over time, as you would when people become more familiar with Link, to a headset or a Bluetooth or corded headset.
Yeah.
It was just really around, again, that cultural
change
and not doing too much too quickly. We find that our staff really, you know, very used to knowing extensions in their head and really quick, you know, the 5 or 6 key contacts and just being familiar with that. The concept of dialing a person or click to call still takes a little bit of time to get their heads around that, as opposed to, oh, what is someone's, you know, mobile phone number? Well, you don't need to know that anymore. You just sort of click to call. So that transition process is probably taking a little bit longer than I would have imagined, but I'm an IT guy, so I love all this stuff.
Sure, but you still have phones. That's
correct, and it's just a bit of a comfort level. Oh, so I might not use it, but it's there. I know it's there.
So your organizations will be unique as well. You need to factor in, you know, this is not just a soft phone solution, but you can have phones, and there's a plethora of phones that will work with Link or optimize for Link. On the flip side is someone like James at Super Partners. What did you do for phones, and why?
We didn't use them.
Why?
Look, there are...
So you're a soft phone... A full soft phone shop.
We are full soft phone across the 2,500 people. So that was the right call for our business, not necessarily the right call for yours, but The reasons were, well, there were multiple reasons. You know, when we were doing our business case, there's a pretty compelling cost argument not to roll out phones, let's be honest. You know, a headset is roughly, I'd say, 2 to 3 times cheaper than a phone. But that really wasn't the compelling reason. We were putting in Link as an organisational enabler, as a transformation technology, and we wanted people to roam, sure, to be able to work from home. Sure. And
oops.
Hello.
Yeah.
And not to be tethered to a desk, yeah, you know. What's the point in having a phone if all users are going to want to do is go into a meeting room and be able to use Link, so they're going to need a headset as well. So really it was about portability, okay, it was about saving money, and it's about moving away from, you know, every time a phone breaks, I have to call Icon, my vendor, and get him to fix it. I don't have to do that anymore. I've just got 50 spare headsets in the cupboard that desktop support.
What about change management, though? I mean, did your users adopt to that change from having to go from a regular phone to a soft phone, or did you have to...
Oh, look, we actually deployed phones to our first pilot site.
Yep.
So we've still got meeting rooms. We've still got hundreds of common area phones. But for our first site, we deployed traditional handsets, and we pulled them back. So what we learnt out of that was users were just as happy with headsets. You know, you get the odd, you know, the odd lady at reception might complain that her hair gets messed up, but you know, ultimately there wasn't too much noise, and we pulled them back, and we had support from the executive steering committee to roll out headsets, and that flowed. The CEO has a headset.
Right.
So there are no exceptions. Now, it wasn't just headsets, it was USB. So, you know, if there's an OH&S issue, someone's got a hearing aid, we will give them a USB handset. The key thing is, though, it's USB. And the other thing is, which is a big one, we didn't have PoE switches everywhere. Now, that was that's $500,000 would have cost to refresh our PoE fleet. So, you know, the numbers really did stack up, and ultimately it was the right call for our business.
So I'm going to just stop there and, you know, open it up to you guys, because we haven't given out any shirts yet. I'm a bit getting worried there. So, there you go. First question.
Question for Andrew. I was actually on the course with one of your employees. I know that they do their... You were talking about you were doing your own support. Who supports you if you can't fix something? Is that...
It depends which one of my employees... So what name? What was his name? I'm a bit nervous.
Gavin?
Yeah. Okay. Gav. Oh, that's cool. No. So we actually, one of our philosophies is we wanted to do more ourselves, and we had really big consultant budgets. And just this week, we've heard out of probably the last month. I'm in legal IT, as I said, and probably 5 people I know at my level of job have been made redundant in the past probably 2 months that I know of, and a lot of that is around, I think, adding value back to the companies. So we actually took a proactive approach 3 years ago to sort of really smash our costs, and one of our biggest costs was consultant budgets across practice management systems, plus telephony, plus and exchange and all those sort of things. So we actually, Gav is actually a superstar. He didn't have very much experience 3 years ago, and as you probably met him on a training course, where he's just been smashing training, certification and all that sort of stuff, and he's come along absolute leaps and bounds. And that was part of our whole vision and our whole strategy to become very self-sufficient. We use Generation E, who Nathan's down here. Nathan wasn't the guy that called me an idiot, but so he's still pretty cool. But we use Generation E. We found them quite small, so didn't want to go somewhere big. We could have gone to one of the other vendors that are quite big. We chose someone that was actually sort of a cultural fit for us, that was kind of small and wasn't going to require... So happy to just have us do it ourselves and train us how to do it. And that took a bit of getting through, and that was basically a strategic thing to add value back to the business and cut our costs, and that seemed to work for us. Yeah. So we get to a certain level and Gavin can do most things.
There's another question there.
To any one of you that relates to video and planning of the network, especially the bandwidth, say voice became is like telephone concurrency, how many people making a call at any point in time, then we can know if we transfer to a link, we know how many concurrency calls we have to do. But any people will also pick up the voice as well. How do you participate or how do you anticipate the voice or the video traffic as well? And how you see in your organization people consume the voice? Because traditionally we see people's, it's a new features. We want to use
so,
to see each other. However, going forward, it's like...
So if I might just repeat the question for everybody else. Your question was, how do we predict the need or how much bandwidth will be consumed in a video environment if we don't have video today? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody want to take a stab at that before I go for it?
With great difficulty. It's not something you can ultimately, I guess, get down to a... Here's a set of predictable metrics that you can then architect a solution around. One of the things we're doing at the moment is using the monitoring kind of role that's, you know, everyone should deploy. It's just a no-brainer in my view, just to get that some kind of baseline measure as part of our initial deployment. We're fortunate we're doing our deployment in a centralized kind of metro high bandwidth environment, so video is not killing us yet, but it gives you a good understanding of patterns. Video comes on is a great novelty initially, desk to desk, but that tends to fall away a little bit. The desktop sharing is probably the bigger one you'll come across, because if you have a lot of regional people coming into a desktop sort of sharing session, it's probably going to have a reasonably high impact as well. It's probably that one I'd focus on. But yeah, put the monitoring role in, have a look at it, have a look at the patterns you get as you deploy, and you'll get some really good stats out of that, and at least give you an idea of number of sessions, how many sessions, average length of call, etc.
So, I'd also just say get your calls right, because yeah, I mean you want to be able to guarantee that that video is going to be delivered successfully, but also you know you might want to deprioritize that versus voice versus application sharing or some of the other workloads.
So also to just add to your question there, there's tools that Microsoft have published that can actually help you with some planning around that. So first thing is that TechNet actually has how much bandwidth every call takes and whatnot, and you can actually nail down those bandwidths per CAC rules, call admission control rules that you can. But also there's a planning tool that you can pipe in and say, you know, I expect 30% of my users to use video and whatnot, and it can give you the amount of bandwidth that's needed that you can plan for. But like Fernando said, right, once you've deployed it and with the expectation that, hey, you know what, I am going to use just 5 megabits Mbps as opposed to 10 or whatnot, but keep a lookout on the monitoring server. So the monitoring server is built into Link, and the story gets even better in 2013, but this is actually a sample report from one of these customers here, and you can see a statistical report on the amount of minutes or amount of conferencing data that gets used, and you can plan for this as you go up as well. So I know a customer that actually is not on this panel today, but they use the monitoring server to actually size up their network as they roll it out. So for example, in your first week of usage, right, you'll actually see a low uptake of, say, video, for example. And in the second week, as people figure out how to use it, it'll spike up. And you can see and you can control that. And you have policies to control who gets video, who gets what resolution of video. So there's a lot of control around it as well. So tools are there. Monitoring servers give you some real-time stats. There's actually a vendor out in the UC showcase that does real-time monitoring of number of calls that's on the wire as well. So there's a lot of things that you can do around bandwidth planning. Partners that are in the room and not here as well, Link certified partners can help you with network assessments to make sure that your network is up to scratch. Sorry, I just need to give you a shirt, and we've got many other questions there at the back.
Don't you work with me? I'll answer it because he works with me.
So I'm going to start with that question by saying, what are the gotchas over here, which we were going to cover anyway, but thanks for preempting. So go ahead.
We actually did the two things. We were actually pretty early. So this was, to us, this is like crazy. When we actually went to market to do it, we actually bought some hardware. It wasn't delivered, but at that time, we also had the same phones, the CX600s. There's no... Did you guys have the no music on hold thing? Initially, yeah, you got it now. But when we
went live, we couldn't have music on hold for our clients. So when the client rang up, basically the person... We actually never had this problem because we actually got a workaround before we went live, but there was this just an assumption that, you know, from my perspective, like, you know, that's like madness. So I'll just put you on hold and it just goes deadly silent. And basically the person thought that we hung up and they'd hang up. The other one that was pretty tricky, two other ones that were pretty tricky for us was...
Sorry, Andrew, can I just... I'm guessing that everybody went through that same board on music on hold. How did you rectify it?
If you have handsets, you don't have the issue.
Yeah. So...
yeah, so it's on the gateway.
Okay, so just to answer a couple of things there. So what Andrew was talking there was music on hold via the handphones itself or the desk phones, and it's resolved by actually having music on hold through the gateways and SPAs that Microsoft certify, and actually piping them through the gateways. And as James said, if you have a soft phone, different story. You have music on hold directly from the client itself. So, and there are phones today that do music on hold from the phones as well as from your gateways, right? So it just depends on which phone you buy versus the gateway you buy and so on. Sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, so we had two more, which was the call pickup. I don't know whether... Has anyone deployed Link? You guys have that one as well?
Yep.
Oh, my God. So that freaked us out. Like, so that was basically our PAs and fee earners, we call them, actually have quite a one-on-one relationship, and there's no way for a PA to pick up the phone from their fee earner natively. It's a feature that's lacking. What we found is it's called... simultaneous ring call routing groups, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, delegates. There's a few different ways, but that actually turned out for a negative to become quite a positive. Our users love it, and we moved office in December, and we had one partner that was very clever, and he's actually worked out a way to make his PA do all his work, and basically he still bills 8 hours a day at $600 an hour or whatever. I'm talking it up a bit. He's a very good guy, but he actually put a... He has no window looking into the office. He has his own office with a door shut, and we gave him Link, and they said, well, you know, how am I going to pick up the phone? The simultaneous ring, blah blah blah. But what he found, he thought he was the smartest person in the world because no one would ever know if he was in the office or not, and like people would just walk in and say, and then about took him about 3 months to work out there was presence, and that people knew when he was touching his computer, and the final one, what's the... There was one other one which is around how integrated it is to Exchange. Did you guys put pins on your phones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so so he's probably the smartest guy here, right? By not putting phones out for a PABX replacement. But the pins, basically, once it's integrated, it's the device is Active Directory authenticated. And basically, we didn't push out pins. We didn't push out our pins until after we completely did all our sites. And what we tried to get away with, because we were really scared of having pins, and we didn't understand. There's a bit of confusion because I was so new about the whole idea of what a pin does. Like, because we originally thought that pin meant that you couldn't make a phone call without putting your pin number in, which would be pretty silly. You can actually do that, but that what happened was people could walk into other people's offices and pick up their phone and actually just one click dial voicemail.
Lock pins.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, pins are a constant source of frustration to me. You should fix that in the new version. But I mean, you've got a voicemail pin. It's
yep.
different to your dialing conferencing pin. And if you want to lock your phones because of the voicemail issue, you've got an unlock pin. I mean, we obviously got rid of the phones, but we've still got two pins. And I understand there's still two pins in the new version. So that's an issue. The other issue we have is call recording. I don't know about you guys, but we have a requirement for call recording of our Link users, and I'm yet to find a good solution for that. I know there are vendors out there, but personally, I don't know of a good solution for that. So we have a couple of hundred users that we're struggling to move to Link because they have a requirement for this call recording capability.
So just to extrapolate on James's point, and I'll come back to call pickup as well, because there's some interesting scenarios that you'll need to know about call pickup. From what these guys have done. So with call recording, there are certified vendors for call recording, NICE, Verint, and so on and so forth. And this Zcom here as well that's shaking their hand saying they've got a call recording solution. So probably I can connect you with these guys to see what we can do there. David, call pickup for you. Being a counsel, I've heard this many times with call pickup. What did you do there? What did you find? And how did that change?
Group pickup or call pickup is definitely something from the PABX era, and it was definitely a source of fear and terror through the organisation for those that used it as we started to deploy the next batch of people that were notified their deployment and come running up and, oh my God, there's no group pickup, what am I going to do? Basically, we added more detail and explanation to really reassure people about the changes around group pickup. The same outcome is achievable with Link. The call gets answered. And it can be answered by the same people. But the concepts of pulling the call to you or having it delivered to you by the person that actually is the owner of the call, the person's phone that rings, are different. So to address that, it was really a training issue and just explaining the difference in concept and getting away from that mindset of a desk and a number... a phone and a number sit on a desk, and that's just how it works. It's really about the concept of the number now belongs to you as a staff member, and it will go with you. And it's up to you to decide how you treat your calls. We, as an organisation, we don't have all these big policies and rules about how things must work with phones, but the PABX era and environment really created this culture of how we must use our phones. But in the real world, today with Link, I can control it. Why shouldn't I? I'm the one that can decide how it's most effective and efficient for me to service the customer who calls me.
And remember you telling me a story about a call pickup that was landing on a direct DID when...
Yes. That was, in our deployment, that was an interesting challenge we come across. Some users have direct numbers, and I'll give our accounts payable people as an example. They'd been with council a number of years, and they had direct numbers. What they'd been doing was printing their direct numbers on checks and things like that for customer inquiries. Now, that's great and may seem very helpful, but having their actual direct in-dial numbers publicly available in a Link environment where if they change jobs, that number now will move with them, the number will not stay with the desk and the function of the job, does create some challenges. So. That's quite easy. You just create a pilot or a bogus number and have that, you know, like a hunt group concept, and just have that delivered to the appropriate users. But we did, in the deployment, find that practice was happening through council in a few areas. And that's one of the tasks we need to go back and readdress. Okay.
So what about music on hold? Do you have music on hold today with Link?
Yes, we do. That's delivered by the gateway.
Okay. Andrew, yourself, you've got music on hold today with Link now? Yeah.
Not very good music on hold.
Okay.
Well, you put it in front of a radio, dude.
So we actually, because we're an IP firm, we're not allowed to steal music.
Of course.
Right? So we actually have to...
Radio needs licenses, by the way.
The lamest on-hold music you're ever going to hear. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I had more questions there. Yes, go ahead, sir. I'm pointing to James because I know there's context over there.
We were hit with a substantial bandwidth upgrade cost from Telstra. That wasn't directly related. It was associated with the Link deployment, but it was more around our decision to move away from traditional TDM and ISDN to SIP trunks. What Telstra don't and the other providers don't tell you is when they're pushing SIP is that, it doesn't cost any more than ISDN, but by the way, it's another $20,000 a month of bandwidth charges. So it's an interesting conversation you'll have to have with your manager when he does get that first bill. We had to design our quads for all those different workloads. And we had to obviously size and think about the implications of moving away from ISDN and moving to SIP and having calls that traditionally would have gone out to regional sites come into data centres and get found out and that kind of thing.
So why did you move to SIP trunks?
We moved to SIP for most reasons. The people are moving away from traditional carriage, and that's because it's very difficult with ISDN to achieve business continuity and design for failover scenarios. An ISDN, generally you have a phone number attached to a physical wire that comes into a building, into an address, and if that service fails, it's very difficult to route that into another ISDN service. I mean, you can do it from Telstra and they charge an arm and a leg for it, but it's location specific. You have to be on the same exchange and it's complicated. With SIP, all that goes away. It's just an IP service. You can provision SIP capacity in days, not months, like with ISDN, and as it's IP, you can load balance it, failover between data centres, basically virtualise the service, which very difficult to do with ISDN.
Does that answer your question, sir?
We had five sites, roughly six, seven, five sites. So that were sitting on about 10 meg. We bumped them to 20, but that was a decision. Strictly speaking, we didn't need 10 meg uplifts, but we made a decision. That's obviously it's a shared benefit. Users will get an advantage out of a bandwidth upgrade. We did double our links, and a lot of that was to do with the decision around SIP and the way that we're routing our calls. But I wouldn't necessarily think all of you will need to double your WAN links. That won't be the case.
Just as he's saying, right, data centers. He mentioned a couple of data centers here. Mark, can we have the slide up for the dual data centers? And what I want to specify is, in James's case, he chose to have a two data center backup, something similar to what we have up on deck, and it is a failover data center. Do you want to just describe what you've done there and why you've done that from a Link perspective?
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the big advantages in moving to Link for us was to be able to architect a solution and build levels of resiliency into it that simply didn't exist on the old platform. I can't speak for you, but our old phone system wasn't in our data center. It was in our building where the users are, and that building, it shouldn't have that type of infrastructure in it, So by moving to Link, we were able to, virtualize the servers, get them into a data center, and then architect it with multiple pools for resiliency.
Okay. Now, that's a dual redundant enterprise edition pool that is catering to James' needs, where it's connected to a contact center and whatnot. I want to switch to David here, who's got a different architecture for his data center. David, do you want to walk us through what the ideology was around this?
A very, very easy one. And something that I preach is the KISS principle, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. In IT, a lot of the times we tend to over-engineer and over-architecture our solutions. And there's risks and problems with that. And not only have you got possibly unnecessary costs that don't necessarily provide any business benefit, but you increase the complexity. Chances are, sooner or later, something could fail or the upgrade paths start to become very difficult when the time comes. We're a very generic, straight-out-of-the-box solution. And the reasons for that really is a lot of our IT principles for the council, we're ITIL, something we follow, vendor best practice, industry best practice, and also our corporate strategic directions and plans for ICT. They're pretty much the fundamental framework for the decision-making process of what we do. As far as our architecture goes, for Link, it is very generic, straight out the box. But there's a lot of benefits in that for us. Not being a complex configuration, we manage a lot of it internally from a day-to-day point of view. We have used Microsoft partners to help us set it up and so forth. But as we go forward with the product, it's commodity.
So the key thing here is that these guys have a standard edition pool in two sites, and they actually fail over to each other for voice, whereas in James's case, he has a much more highly redundant architecture for all UC workloads. So you can plan for redundancy based on what workloads you want to be redundant, and you can keep it either really simple, or you can actually have a fully redundant UC system as well, which includes redundancy for video conferencing, web conferencing, and so on and so forth.
I guess, Selvin, also in our particular situation, as we were coming from a PABX environment, we didn't really have any redundancy at all.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're abound with redundancy. Just by the nature of the design itself. So, and it was cheap and cost effective for us to do.
Okay. Sorry, yes, go ahead. So the question was, with regards to redundancy, are you leveraging hardware load balancers? Fernando, do you want to...
We use a Citrix NetScaler product, internal and external load balancing. We're not, and I've got my network guys here, I don't think we're utilizing them for this yet.
Yeah, so...
We are.
Front end to load balancing.
Yeah. And I'm also going to flip to James quickly as well.
Look, we made the decision when we designed it, well, I made the decision, to not leverage the load balancers. I mean, it's unavoidable for the web-facing components. You have to use load balancers for that. We use Radware app directors, but we are using DNS load balancing for the rest of the solution. And personally, having run it now, it just works. I don't have to call my managed service provider and say, reconfigure the load balancers and wait 2 months. I'm just using it for the essential components.
Just a comment on that. I mean, we were coming from a PBX risk, high risk outage scenario. We've gone to a solution where we probably don't have as much resiliency due to some other issues that we would like, but it's head and shoulders above everything we had in the past. And not only that, it's obviously increased the service offering that we can do. So I think it comes back to where you come from as well, what your current scenario is, what your requirement is around that, and sort of architect a solution you need around that load balancing. Do you need to have front or internal load balancing at all for some of your services? It's really what is your BCP, what are your requirements? Really engage with the business on that kind of service levels.
Sorry, I was promised Amanda a question. So is your question around how do you have collaboration in your business case?
Was it accepted? And I mean, we've got lots of collaboration for us, but we would be looking for link for more collaboration.
Sure.
I can actually answer that because we had being a government organisation, we sort of had a steering committee with this executive sponsorship, very business focused. Supposed to, as I mentioned at the beginning, it wasn't a technology. We didn't sell it as a technology solution. We sold it as a business transformation project, and these are the benefits you will get. Certainly the collaboration from the video, audio, and the travel savings, as I mentioned, they love that. And they where you can show where you can save them cost, it's a no-brainer. It's a victory for them. But we had a structure where our sign-off or our approvals went through an executive-level business focus group, as we would obviously sell that service. It's what you can and can't do. And again, being an agency, government agency, a lot of policy behind that you need to develop. But if you target it as a business solution and a business saving, that's something I'd recommend.
Might actually have Andrew comment on that as well. I think he had a business case around collaboration too.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like we did, but we didn't get much buy-in. It's an interesting question. Like we're talking about value adding, and what I've found is... IT's changed over the past 10 years, everyone knows that, when we are asking for value. And what we found is we trickled it out as well, and we didn't tell them anything about the software, about the video, the collaboration, the desktop sharing, the conferencing. We had the room-based stuff, so that was cool, but that was a very select thing. If it was me and I was thinking about it, I'd actually sort of focus on what you can deliver that's going to sort of replace and then look at the added value stuff later. And we trickled that out in a way that actually we could leverage the benefits to the firm over and over again. So for an internal marketing perspective for IT, so we actually think that it's a better way to look at it is talk about how can you actually add value back to the company. And I think that not doing everything at once is good, like especially like you guys, and also then just sort of using marketing tools to actually then develop things a bit, and you can sort of extend the process of the savings. If you do it all at once, you've got nothing else to do. That's our problem now, is that we've done a lot of stuff and they expect new stuff all the time. You're laughing, you've got the same problem. It's a really big, it is a really big problem because it actually solves too many problems at once for us. And yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go to this side because I haven't really asked over here. Sorry, go ahead.
Does anyone actually have a call queuing system and one for this, two for that, and a place in a corner you can get statistics out of that as to how many people will drop off?
So I'm going to ask that in two ways. The first one is, James, can you talk about your contact center environment? How does it integrate into Link and whatnot?
The answer is it doesn't. No, I mean that's not fair. Look, we made the decision to adopt essentially two phone systems. So we have our corporate users who are on Link, and we have our call center users who are in the process of moving to Genesys. Integrate the two platforms through, again, the NET gateways, and ICOM came in and gave us a big hand with that. And those two systems route like any other phone system at that point. That's about as far as the integration goes. So, you know, Genesys is a very powerful call center, but there isn't too much integration between the two platforms. It's not a certified product, and obviously there are vendors out there that do offer certified solutions for Link.
So just on that comment, Genesys about 3 weeks ago became certified for Link, along with the rest of the of what we have here as call centers for Link that are certified to work with Link. I'm just going to go across the board, which I didn't ask. Andrew, do you use response groups internally?
No, haven't. Okay.
David's got a contact center.
Yeah, Android and tell us that within Link, no, we don't use response groups at this stage.
Okay. So, is that okay? Go ahead, sir.
Question for James. In a pure software environment, how do you deal with the challenge of people when they are not in the office on a public wireless network or working from home on ADSL? In terms of voice quality, how do you just tell them as your internet connection is as good as good?
So, I mean,
I'll just repeat the question for everybody else. The question was, how do you? What's your experience on call quality outside of your office if you're working from home or in a hotel, especially from a soft phone? Okay.
It's a good question. What we've found is that we run edge services, so it's fully accessible from the internet. It was one of the big selling points. You don't have to VPN in. Fantastic. That works really well. On slow connections, I've been calling here on the Wi-Fi, fantastic. And, you know, I bought my soft phone and, you know, jumped onto a meeting yesterday. Tried doing that with the phone. But anyway. that works well, but the problem is that that's just voice, you know. Chances are if people crack open a laptop, they're going to want to check their emails and access the intranet. So they need to VPN in to do that. What we have found is that the performance is awful through the VPN. And, you know, that's probably a virtue of the fact that our VPN infrastructure is crummy. But it's just extra, obviously it's additional processing and steps, and that results in, quite frankly, a suboptimal call experience via VPN, and we are upgrading our VPN infrastructure to get around that. So that's something to consider for you guys if you are going to offer remote access.
So also if you...
Full VPN or split tunneling?
Yeah.
We're a financial services company, no split tunneling, yeah.
So what happens with the soft phone if you're outside the network? It comes to the edge, and if you have split tunneling, it won't add the IP packet header for VPN on your VoIP packets. regardless of technology, if it's a VoIP packet and you're going to add another bunch of VPN headers to it, and on a wire that's unmanaged, such as internet, you are going to have call quality that you cannot control. That's where something like split tunneling works, where you don't actually have that header and avoid the need for it. Like, for example, our day-to-day use, like if I'm over here, I don't use VPN because of the services through the edge, and it's a secured services through the edge as well. Okay. Last question before I actually want to wind up with some giveaways and so on. Sorry, Sid, go ahead. Can I split that into two questions, and I'll just repeat it for everybody else's sake. One is, what's the future planning vision around Link Online and how this panel is going to think about it? The second was around external communications to people that are using Link outside or Skype outside or consultants that are outside your business or your business partners and so on. Before I pass it down to the panel, just a quick comment on Link Online. There is a session... which is just straight after this, I think, which is called the Link Voice Improvements, that has that touches on what we call as hybrid Link. If you're interested in knowing about Link Online and knowing more about what's coming in Link Online, absolutely attend that session. I'll have the track up soon shortly. I'm just going to point to, because I'm not sure if anyone's... I'm going to take one enterprise, one government customer here. So...
With regards to Link Online, and in fact most online, I mean we are financial services, we're audited by APRA, so they come in and they conduct audits, and you know they do look closely at cloud-based infrastructure, as a result, an online deployment, well, certainly an offshore deployment, was simply not an option for us. It had to be on-prem, That's down to the level of we've deployed director servers to increase security at the recommendation of Microsoft, and we enforce certificates at the edge, and we take it to the nth degree. Right now it's not in scope for us. Certainly until Microsoft build an Australian data centre, and then we'd think about
it. And government there?
Certainly from the external conferencing capability, I think, well, one of the issues around Link and trying to have external parties, the whole Link attendee, or if you want the full experience having the Link client, I know the new 2013 architecture with the Link web app looks quite promising to allow that. We've also extended out using Polycom infrastructure, for example, for our office, video border proxy technology. We have a requirement where one of our business units wants to interact with the education network and do school. The schools come in and they can do some training or some sessions. So that is definitely on our roadmap. It's how I guess that we now deliver that to the organisation. It's definitely a requirement for us. And just to touch on the call quality, I guess, of the phones, I also use a soft phone, by the way, even though I have a headset, but I've travelled many times, for example, on the Sydney's rail network through various 3G hotspots, and the call quality there, and when I'm on an audio session, is fine, is great. I've been able to transfer my call to a mobile, go to the car, hook it up to a Bluetooth. Then at the end of the session, I asked, did you know where I was? And my boss, who's the CIO, I thought you were in your office. Like it was, there was no concept there of not knowing where my location was. So I think that, for us, has been a great. We have a lot of regional staff. Some of our staff have worked overseas and sort of come back in. So the quality of the audio has been fantastic. As you add more services above that, obviously, on an XG or contested network, you're going to have potentially some issues. So our experience has been very positive as a summation. 2013 is looking pretty good as well for us.
Just one more point on that. My boss thinks I'm at work now.
So also the other bit was around federation. So I'm going to ask James.
I didn't mean link online 365.
Right. But
so extending link to people outside of the company. That's the Link web app is our solution to that. We do make a point of putting in the training material for users that you don't have to be an employee of the company to attend these online meetings. You can come in on a web browser, and obviously that experience is going to get a lot better in the new version. So yeah, we're actively pushing that. How much it's used? Not that much at the moment, I'd say. Generally, the collaboration is contained within the company.
So guys, we've got to wrap. I just want to thank our panel and thank you guys for coming. Before we leave and do the draws, just want to give away some gifts that we have for our customer panel that have graciously accepted to come here and have this discussion here. So on behalf of our partners and us, something for each one of you here. And more Linkware. So we're also going to do draws again. We're going to do the Andrew Ersing way, which is the random event. So you all have numbers on your badges. Who here has a number about 3,000? Anybody here with a number about 3,000 should be on your badges. What's your number? 3248. So. Sorry? 3248. Yeah, okay. Also, guys, evals, there's prizes to be won if you fill out evals. But if you like this session, please fill out your evals and let us know if you like the session. We cannot have the session next year if you guys didn't want the session to be back again next year. So, absolutely, please fill out evals. Let us know what you think. So there's four prizes to be drawn today for you guys. Three Link headsets that are certified, and the Star Wars kit as well.
What, no handsets?
we're going the James way. Okay.
So we said 3248?
Yep, so the first draw. And we'll go the nearest number, that 2216. Anybody near 2216?
526.
Sorry, what did you say, sir?
Four.
Yep, that's probably it. A headset. No, we'll do that. One of these headsets, yes. Thank you. Another one? Mario? Sorry, what's the number? Okay, so that's only four away. There you go.
733.
Anybody as close as possible to? 7, sorry, who said something? What did you say? Okay, Nathan. Okay. 714, who was that? 714, who was that? There you go, that's closer, sorry. Bummer.
I've got enough headsets.
Another one, Mario. There you go. Two 2041. Anyone as close as possible to 2041, not you, Andreas. What's your number? 20. Oh, nice. All right, okay. There you go. Okay, so the So the Star Wars kid.
Last one.
1371.
Bingo.
1318. 1318. Okay, anybody else? 1385. 13 who? 85? Someone's got 85? 1385, that's him. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Here you go.